And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
James, usually when TV shows do like a season premiere, it's like really exciting. Like when SNL starts their season, they get like a big guest. We do not have that today, but we have a lot to talk about. How are you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, here's your intro. This is the show's going to suck. Is that what you're saying?
No.
We're calling this one Shaking Out the Cobwebs because we haven't talked to each other. We haven't talked to each other while recording in 7 weeks. So I barely remember what this show is called or what it's about.
So what we do on here is we break down a team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We get into really deep, nerdy stuff. We talk about stats. We talk about players, line combinations, strategy.
Well, we can't talk about any of that.
There's this thing called the salary cap.
We can't talk about any strategy or anything because nothing's happened yet. So,
well,
there's no stats.
There's no stat. Well, no, but we do have a lot to look forward to and a lot to look ahead to. And so I think we should start today before we get into the results of the fan survey, which if you haven't seen it, go to theathletic.com and find it and look at it. It's really interesting. And obviously go to theathletic.com/leafreport if you haven't signed up. We're going to have tons of stuff coming. And obviously it's a big season for the Leafs. So if you're listening to this podcast, give it a shot. I think the biggest training camp storyline is Austin Matthews and his wrist. We've heard him, you know, speak a little bit in the last week. He talked to The Athletic, among other places. What's your concern level? The fact that this is obviously delayed a bit more than you would like.
I'm not concerned. I mean, the Leafs aren't concerned. Austin Matthews isn't concerned. I mean, maybe he might miss a couple of games, but I think he'll be all right. I mean, it's probably good that he got the procedure done right instead of waiting and then you get into like training camp or the season and then you have this and then you miss a couple of months. I was thinking though, Jonas, training camp's going to open on the 22nd, which is that a week from today? A week from yesterday. Today's Thursday. Week from today. So Sheldon Keefe's going to have to start putting together line combinations and everything without Austin Matthews.
You betcha.
And I was trying to think like, okay, so who goes where? And without him, they just don't, you know, the line combinations are not that impressive, basically. And it's sort of the same thing they ran into when Tavares went down in the playoffs, but on another level because Austin Matthews is their best player and probably the second best player in the NHL. And so if they have to play the first, I guess the good news is that the start of their schedule this season is pretty soft. There's not a lot of world beater teams in there. So if he misses the first few games, they should be okay, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
I actually think on that last point, I think it's probably not the worst thing because it'll give them a chance to play around with some different combinations. Like, I remember talking to you and you felt even last year at points that they were a little too stuck in with Matthews and Marner. And obviously it worked great, but they didn't play around as much as we'd seen them in the past. And obviously I'm talking about Sheldon Keefe, but I want to go back to the first point. I'm a little more skeptical than you are. Like, I need to see this be okay. Like, I can't just, I'm sorry. Like, at this point, I can't just assume that everything is okay. The surgery would imply that they've fixed this issue, but the fact that this lingered all of last year, it obviously came back again in the offseason to the point that they needed surgery, and now he's going to miss the start of camp. And like, this is, you kind of need to see it be okay for it to be okay. Obviously, if he misses a few games at the start of the season and he's fine, that's great. Like, that's the ideal scenario, but that really needs to be the case. Like, they can't have this be a thing like it was last year is what I'm thinking.
I can't think of another player where a wrist was like became a chronic thing and it continued to hold a player out. If I recall correctly, I think Chris Pronger towards the end of his career ran into a bunch of wrist problems.
It's just like this in this particular, with this person, like that matters a great deal.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is that if the surgery presumably just fixed what the problem was, and the reason it was recurring is because they were trying not to have the surgery. And sometimes when you try and rehab it as your only way of fixing things, it becomes chronic. And, you know, people listening can correct me if I'm wrong, but I just can't think of another like goal scorer in the NHL where like, or like, I don't know, can you think of other guys in other sports, Jonas? It's just like the mechanics of the wrist, I think, are relatively simple. And we don't know a lot about the procedure that he underwent. So, and I haven't really talked to any doctors or anything like that about what happened, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a back injury or something where it's like what Jack Eichel's going through that.
Right.
My guess is that this is going to be behind him.
And that would be the best case scenario, obviously. He's their best player. I think that's fair. Is there another training camp storyline that really intrigues you? Is there a player you're very curious to see? Anything else of a special interest to you?
I think, as with every year, I think all the new players, and specifically, I think all the new forwards are the thing that a lot of us are going to be looking out for. I want to see what the line combinations are like. I guess at first we're not really going to know because Matthews isn't going to be there. Like, I guess they just use Kerfoot as like a placeholder for Matthews. Yeah. They don't really...
Or you just play Tavares. I would think you'd play Tavares there. Like, I think you probably have to assume like he's not going to play the first game. And if he plays the first game, great. Like, I that's what I would do. I'm not... Who knows what Sheldon Keefe will do, but I would assume that he's not playing and prepare that way.
Well,
I don't think is the worst thing. Like, maybe you play Matthew or Tavares with Marner or whatever, and it works, and you kind of leave that. You know what I mean?
Well, and Kerfoot and Nylander played pretty well together in the playoffs, and so
yeah.
Jonas, I don't know if you can hear him. I've got my window open, and it's really loud outside. It is crickets that are just like at the top of their going as loud as they can. Can you hear that?
No.
I gotta close the windows.
We can insert a cricket noise. They're great producer, they're just, Jeff Domet, can get on that.
They're just getting ready for when I have a bad pun or a bad joke. Here, I'm gonna close my window. Hold on. This would be awesome podcast, unless Jeff cuts this out, which he probably will.
Wow. This is gold. I didn't know crickets, and this is probably an ignorant fact, but I thought crickets mostly did their business at night. But
yeah, you know, I think I misspoke. I think they're grasshoppers, but it sounds like crickets. Oh. It's like loud, loud, loud chirping. So we moved last year in the fall, and this is our first year we've been here for like August and September. And, you know, when you move to a new neighborhood and a new house, and you got to go through the whole year to know what all the different seasons are like. So we were attacked by squirrels. A squirrel built a big nest. We have this little balcony near the master bedroom, and a squirrel took it over and like had babies there and like built this huge, when we were away, built this huge like Taj Mahal squirrel nest. And so that happened, and then
good for the squirrel.
And then now, yeah, not good for me, unless you want to come clean it up. I don't really want to deal with it. Now does anyone listening to the show know a service you can call that's like 1-800 get rid of squirrel houses? Because I need that service. And now the crickets are just like, it's fine. Or the grasshoppers, I'm sorry. There must be millions of them. And the other thing that's happening is that there is a fox running around the neighborhood. And everyone's worried about and I saw a video of it. And it's like, it's actually like a, I thought I was expecting it to be like a little runty fox or something. It's like a big orange fox. So yeah,
I don't think you really need to worry about foxes.
Well, they're worried with the kids, right? So, you know, it's been running around the schools and stuff like that. And this neighborhood's, I didn't move that far away from where we were. I don't want to say exactly where I live, but, you know, we live pretty close to downtown, like probably only like a 10-15 minute drive from downtown Toronto. But this neighborhood, we get rabbits on the street, we get skunks, we get obviously tons of raccoons. It's like, it's a very natural.
Did you guys move into like the forest or something?
Well, we're pretty close to like, they're like some of the big ravine systems that are in Toronto. So I didn't realize that we would get so much wildlife around here. Sorry.
All right.
That's,
well,
that's my, I diverged there for some reason.
Okay, I'm going to give you three choices because I want to talk a little bit more about camp because camp is next week and people are looking forward to it, including us. Okay, so you can choose from the Power Play, an extension for Morgan Riley, or who's going to play in the top six alongside those guys we talked about before.
Let's do the forwards because I sort of mentioned that I was like interested in that. So Let's keep some continuity in the show and put it back on the rails.
Well, I think it's very likely that Nick Ritchie obviously will have one spot. I would expect that to be, I mean, again, like if Matthews isn't there to start, which he won't be, maybe with Marner, I don't know. And I think Bunting is probably the natural choice for the other one. I don't really know. I know you had in your mailbag Andre Kasha. I don't see that right away, but maybe Bunting's the guy I'm really intrigued with. Like, I don't know why. I think like just watching some of his games last year, I kind of became a fan, but like he's the one who I think will become a fan favorite. That's my bet.
I wonder why so many people are picking Ritchie to be the guy. Like, is that just like, he was just like a relatively high draft pick? He's physical.
Be the guy for what?
To play. Oh, like, to play a lot of people are asking, like I saw that some of the media questions to Matthews and Marner are like, oh, you're going to play with Nick Ritchie? Like, I don't know. It seems like some of the other fans and media have kind of, and I asked the question, and I know we're going to get to the survey.
It's a good question.
I asked the question in the survey, which offseason edition did you like the most? And Nick Ritchie won the voting with 28%. Wow. With 28% of the vote, which I wasn't expecting.
You know what I think it is, James? And we'll get to that a bit later. I think it's name recognition.
Yeah,
so
that's
is all
what I was
going to
say. Yeah.
I think that's all it is. Because like I would I be surprised on the first day of camp or on the first game of the season if Bunting is playing with Matthews and Marner? No. Because I actually think he'll be a better fit in on either of those lines actually than Ritchie. I just think there's I don't know. There's a reason. Granted, like Bunting's played 26 NHL games, but there's a reason. Like Bunting or Nick Ritchie actually hasn't really hit. You know what I mean? Like for a guy who's picked in the top 10, like he's just kind of
He takes bad penalties.
I'm not as sold.
He's not a great skater. I guess when there were injuries and stuff, Boston played him with some of their better players, and that's when he. But didn't he produce a lot of that on the power play, if I remember correctly?
Five of his 15 goals were on the power
play. Right. So when he was playing with the Bruins, good players on the power play, he was productive. But
well, and you watch those goals, and it's just like, it's just...
Just banging stuff in.
Exactly. Yeah. Their power play is just ridiculous.
But, it seems he doesn't... Like, people are talking about him being like the Hyman replacement. Like he's not really anything like Zach Hyman at all.
Well, like, the guy who's actually more like Zach Hyman is Bunting.
Right.
Not exactly. He's not as big. He's not like the same kind of forechecker, but the way he scores is very Hyman-esque. Like it's similar. Now, granted, again, he has not done it in the NHL, so he has to prove that. But if anything, like he's more that kind of, like he's actually a bit more of an agitator than Hyman was. Like he's more intriguing to me than Nick Ritchie by a lot.
Do you think
I kind of know Rick Ritchie at this point, but I mean
Rick Nitchie?
Nick Ritchie. Richie Nick. Richie Rich. Did you ever see that movie?
Maybe when he has a bad game, we'll call him Rick Nitchie.
That's good.
Anyway, I'm being stupid. What was I gonna say?
About Ritchie?
Like what would I don't know. It feels weird to put Bunting on a Matthews Marner line to start the season.
Why?
Because, like you said, he's only played like 20 some games.
But like, is I don't know. Like, is Nick Ritchie like really setting the world on fire?
I know what I was going
to
say.
Nick Ritchie to be there, but would I be shocked? No.
I know what I was going to say. Do you think that with the Mikheyev thing, with the trade request, do you think that they try and appease him a little bit and give him a top six role?
That's a good question.
I think they might. I think that you might see him like get another chance with one of the top lines for at least a little bit.
I guess the rationale for that is if you don't do that and you've already got a guy who's a little unhappy with his role and now you sign these two guys, one of whom has barely played in the NHL, and like you immediately put them above him, you might be inflaming the situation. So maybe the problem is like, and this is where like his apparent unhappiness doesn't really make sense. He just didn't produce. They gave him opportunity to play with Tavares and it didn't work. Like he doesn't seem to have the creativity, the instincts offensively to really play in a top six role. Now, maybe that can develop, but like he didn't exactly earn an opportunity to play higher in the lineup. Like, I don't know who he was supposed to play ahead of. Like you could say Alex Galchenyuk, but like he can't make some of the plays that Galchenyuk can. Not even close. You know what I mean?
And Galchenyuk's going to be making plays to nobody. Is he? He's going to be making plays in his apartment at home with a plastic puck.
Are you surprised, by the way, that no one signed him?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I thought a team... My understanding is he was originally holding out for a better contract, which was, I think, going to, in the long run, prove foolish. He should have come back and played a year for the Leafs and at a lower salary. The Mikheyev thing, like, they must have said something to him in his camp to, like, reassure him, I think. Like, I wonder if they said to him, like, you're going to get more opportunities, you're going to still play big minutes. And the tough thing is that the Leafs are kind of coming into camp thinking they're going to have this defense first line centered by David Kampf, right?
Mm-hmm.
The number one winger who I think would be a great choice to play on that line with David Kampf would be Ilya Mikheyev.
Yeah. And maybe that's what you say to him. Like, this line's going to be really important for us.
Yeah, but
we need you to be a big part of
it. You know what it is, though, Jonas, though, that Mikheyev was, he signed that 2-year deal to take him to UFA because he was thinking that UFA was going to be a big payday for him. And if he's just on that checking line and he doesn't produce offense, it's not going to be a big payday for him. He's not going to make much more than what he's making now. So I don't think that we've heard the last of this. I don't think that it wouldn't shock me if I don't know. I just don't know if he's going to be happy playing on like a defense first line the whole season. And I wonder if the Leafs try and accommodate that at some point.
Can they afford to accommodate that?
Well, I mean, so he's going to be UFA. He's presumably not going to want to come back because he's not happy with his role. We're going to talk about Riley, but, you know, there's criticism of the Leafs of walking guys to UFA. Maybe you're like, let's trade Mikheyev for a guy that we're going to have for longer than this season.
Let me just ask you this before we move on. How many goals do you think he scores this year, Mikheyev?
I don't know. What did he have last year? 7 in 50 games or something? I don't have it in front of me. I'm still this is the shaking out the cobwebs episode. I think he had 7 goals. Yeah, he had 7 in 54. There, that was pretty good. And then he had 0 in 7 playoff games. So he had 7 goals in 61 playoff games. You know, I think he can be a guy that gets like 15 goals. Maybe a little bit less than that. It depends what role they use him in, though, Jonas. Like if he's playing with Kampf and getting like 70% defensive zone starts and getting a lot of minutes.
But you know what the problem with that, James, is? So if you're not playing him there, who are you playing with Kampf?
I know. Well, that's the role, and he's good at that. Like, you know, like the playoffs, you know, Mikheyev's taken a lot of heat for not producing offense. He was really good defensively.
I got to be honest. Like Mikheyev, if you're expecting Mikheyev to score, like to win you a series, like I guess he can get you one goal in a 7-game
series. It's a shame because the first, like that first half season, he looked great. I mean, I remember I did that big feature on him after like the first 2 months or whatever. And like, there was like all the Superman stuff around him and there was a lot of like excitement that he was going to be a top six forward and produce offense.
It's kind of dumb, and this feels like a hockey thing, that some shitty team hasn't just signed Galchenyuk, play the crap out of him, and then trade him for a pick at the deadline. Like it's such an easy thing to do. Like if you suck, he'll get a bunch of points. Some team's going to be like, yeah, he could help us. We'll get it. We'll trade him for a pick. Like, I don't know
anyway. For sure, but I don't think he's been willing to sign for like 800 grand or whatever, right? So far.
Well, then that's foolish.
You can't
have a half, not even a half good season. Like it was like a half of a half season and think that like, well, that's going to earn you some big contract.
Waivers, like, he was in the AHL. Yeah. He only played 26 games. Like,
yeah, that's a bit much
for the Leafs.
All right. Morgan Rielly extension. We did a story, I believe in the spring about the three options, which were trade him, extend him, or play it out. And I always thought play it out seemed likelier than not. I wasn't really buying the trade thing, and now the trade thing is not happening. Do you think the extension thing will happen?
So when we wrote that story, do you know the date? Do you know when we wrote that?
No, but if you keep talking, I can find it.
I think it was off season. It was like June, I want to say. It was like before. So we wrote that. I looked at all the comparables for all the similar.
June 28.
Yeah. So that was like a month before free agency opened. Exactly. I pulled all of the comparables, all the defensemen that had signed UFA contracts in the last 5 years that were similar, you know, age, performance to Morgan Rielly. You know, Torrey Krug was one of the ones that stood out to me. And basically I concluded looking at his peer group that Morgan Rielly was on the open market was worth about $7.2 million on a long-term deal as a UFA. Yep.
That seemed right.
7.2 by 7 or 8 years. The problem is that after we did that research and we published that story, you know what happened.
Shit hit the fan, James.
it started raining money on defense.
How did that saying come to be, by the way?
Shit hit the fan?
Yeah, like what does... Well, anyway,
just,
keep going.
Just imagine what would happen if shit hit the fan and you were in that room.
Yeah.
You'd be covered in turd.
Okay.
Sounds like a Norm Macdonald...
Yeah.
Norm Macdonald bit.
R.I.P. Yeah. Okay, continue.
Yeah, I've been watching lots of his stand-up. It's excellent. Where was I? Shit hit the fan. Yeah. So, you know, like all of a sudden Werenski and Nurse and these defensemen who I think some could argue that Rielly is as good or better than started getting
that. Pareko.
Well, Pareko's deal was more reasonable, right? Like Pareko's number was
actually very reasonable.
So like that contract, if that's what Rielly wanted, that's fine. But there were a bunch of contracts that were $9+ million for really long term. Like look at the deal that like Seth Jones got and.
It's a monster.
Hamilton got a monster contract and
$9 million.
Even if you argue that Rielly is lesser than those defensemen, all of those contracts still would push that average number that I'm talking about, the comparable number, probably from 7.2, probably to like about 7.7. And that's probably what he's worth on the open market. I think he's worth like a high 7 on a long-term deal. And in our reader survey, we asked the question, should the Leafs re-sign Morgan Rielly for $7 million on a 7 or 8 year deal? And 56% of Leafs fans said no, they don't want to sign that contract. Well, I don't think he's going to sign for that much. Like when we wrote our story, Jonas, we were thinking like maybe he'll take a discount and come in around 6.5 or like somewhere in the sixes. It's just like that's not going to happen. It's almost like it's a little bit like a Zach Hyman situation where you wait and you don't get the extension done and the asking price goes up and goes up. And then all of a sudden there's nothing left for you to talk about because the asking price is out of reach.
But let me ask you this. If the situation all along was the only way he's going to be able to stay is if he takes a discount, isn't it the same? Like obviously maybe that number changes a little bit, but doesn't it boil down to the same thing? If he wants to stay here,
no,
he's just going to...
No, it's the same with Hyman because like Hyman a year earlier, his version of a discount looked different than it did after he put up another big season. Like it just did. And Rielly before all these defensive, like, so that's what I'm saying. Like a discount for Rielly, you could argue would be like 6.6 or 6.7 before like 2 months. What's June? 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's a discount? 7.3, 7.4. Now a discount is much higher than what it was before. So I don't know how they get an extension done. I'd be surprised if it happens. Like he's looking at you know, that crazy contract that FNUF got, he's looking at, like, that's like the bare minimum I could see him signing for is $7 million a year.
Let me ask you that, Paul, or the survey question. Would you do that?
Oh, man.
I don't think I would.
I kind of lean yes, to be honest. I just don't.
Wow, so we differ. Okay.
I don't know that I have enough faith in like an aging Brody and Muzzin and Hall.
Yeah.
And Sandin. Fair point. They don't, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch Sandin for this, the first half of the season. I mean, maybe he'll look like a top four defenseman. I don't know. And then, like, so if the answer is you're going to replace Riley in free agency, like, look how dumb the prices were in free agency for defensemen. Like, there were terrible defensemen signing for $3 and $4 million a year. Terrible.
Yeah. Which reinforced the decision with
Hall.
Justin Hall at expansion. I just, he'll be 28 when that contract starts.
He's had injuries, like, you know, there's some question whether his, like, mobility is lesser than it has been in the past.
I just think the risk is too high. Like, in terms of him being worth anywhere near that contract, especially, like, the power play stuff is, I don't know how real the power play stuff is. Like, I don't know how much of that was on him, how much of that is, like, the way that they went about things last year.
They need a shooting threat. They need another shooting threat on the power
play. He's not a shooting threat.
But that's not necessarily his fault. It's the combination of having multiple players that aren't shooting threats. Like, if you have Thornton and Marner and Riley, then you're a little bit predictable.
It's just like if that element's a little uncertain defensively, like you don't really trust him. Like, he's like your fourth option in terms of that kind of thing. He doesn't kill penalties. Like, and now I'm going to sign him for 7 years and he's going to be 30 soon. Like, he's so important to, like, the fabric of the team. Like, and some of the stuff he does well, which we don't focus on enough, I don't think, is hard to find. Like, it's hard to find guys like that. And he's performed well in the playoffs. Like, so anyway, that's a conversation for a different day. Let's take a break, James, and let's dive into some of the results of the survey, which we just previewed.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. You did the survey. Is there a question that you want to start with? I have it in front of me. So if not, I can pick.
I think this one was good. What is your biggest remaining concern with the Leafs roster? And there was an overwhelming choice for this one that was a little bit surprising. So
goaltending?
No.
Wow.
The four options I gave were goaltending, defense. I thought you had read this survey.
I did, but like I didn't memorize the results.
Oh, you got to read it more than once.
I'm not like the Rain Man. I can't see it and then just remember. What a great movie, by the way.
Goaltending, defense, forwards, or overall depth. And overwhelmingly, Leafs fans chose overall depth.
Okay, you know what? I'm glad you brought this up. I don't even think this is a hot take. I do not think they're about the same up front as they were last year. Now, obviously the one big
thing. Yeah, but people are more worried about the depth of what they had last year than, like, I think that series, it really created some new concerns in the fan base about
interesting. Depth.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on a column, and that's like the top of my piece is going to be about how like the perception of the forward depth is different.
Well, I guess if you look at it in terms of like playoffs, and you ask the question which we asked before the playoffs last year, does this team have enough offensively to win? And if you didn't think so before, you probably don't think so now. But this whole thing is built on the fact that they're assuming, fair assumption, that their top two lines are just going to carry them through. And I don't think that's a very reasonable assumption. Yet you still would like to have a little bit more possibility of offense from those bottom two lines. So I don't know if those two things can all be true at the same time. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think that's
if they get two goals, three goals from the Matthews line, they win the series, and like, who knows what happens?
I think people look at it like you lose Hyman. They look at it this way. Didn't seem like they had enough offensive depth when Tavares got hurt in the playoffs last year. Then you subtract Hyman. Then you add in like four mystery boxes up front. You bring back Wayne Simmonds.
Yep.
If they need to hit on some of the mystery box guys, like they need some of those guys to be, they need Bunting or Kasha or Richie to be good top six forwards.
Yeah, but true.
Wait, fine. The other thing too, Jonas, is that the answer is overall depth. So it's not just forwards, it's defense too. And I think that from reading social media, it seems like Leafs fans are a bit worried about losing Zach Bogosian on defense.
Yeah, which I think is fair. That's fair. But like, I don't know that you're, I guess where you're worse off is if you have an injury in your top four, but like that was going to be the case whether you had Zach Bogosian or not. But yeah, like I think that's fair. But like ultimately, this team's success or not is going to come down to basically like those four players and goaltending. Like, and I think goaltending is a bigger question than their depth.
So that was the second highest response, but overall depth got 62% and goaltending got 16%. And forwards got 13.6. The funny thing is that when we did this survey, I think it was like 18 months ago or 20 months ago. It was like April of 2020, like not even 2 years ago. The number one answer was defense by far, I believe. And now defense is down to like 8%. It's last.
Well, I mean, one injury and like,
well, they
whoever's going in is not, it's not great option.
There's a couple guys banged up, right, in the informal skates right now, like Hall left.
And Riley's. Don't know how much I read into that stuff. But like, yeah.
So what blue line do you roll out if Hall and Riley are out for game one?
That's silly. I'm not going to base this off a stupid informal skates.
And then Muzzin gets hurt again. And then,
but like James, like what? Don't even like forget about being facetious. Like one injury and who goes in? Is it Biega? Is it Dahlstrom? Is it Liljegren? Like none of those are great options at this point. So that's that's problematic. I wonder if
they try and like claim a D off waivers or something like that. Or is like there's still some guys available in free agency, right? Like isn't like Demers unsigned? And like you could probably still like sign somebody.
Yeah, I guess if that person looks around and says like there's not a great option here, I can be the seven in Toronto, one injury and I'm in.
I mean, they've made noise about they want to give Liljegren a chance, so maybe they're trying not to block him. I'm just looking up what free agent D are still left.
Yeah, that's something Kyle Dubas has mentioned, but to this point what we've seen of Timothy Liljegren, which is not very much, and like he's still really, really young. Like he's only 21, I think.
I believe he's 22 now.
Is he 22 now? Did he just okay?
I think he in April maybe. Here, let me check.
Okay. Well, the point is he's a huge question mark. Biega is just like a depth guy. He's like a Marincin in the Marincin role, and like same thing with Dahlstrom. So like anyway, let's move on to a different question. Is that okay?
I was just looking up free agent D just because I'm on Demers is UFA. Eric Gustafson.
Bring him back.
Sammy Vatanen. Punch. There you go.
Oh, favorite.
Ben Hutton.
Ooh.
What about this?
Yeah, see, Ben Hutton would make sense as a seven.
What about this one, Jonas? Zdeno Chara.
Yeah. I don't think he's coming to be the seventh in Toronto.
Jack Johnson. Braden.
All right, we're moving on.
Colburn. Nate Prosser.
Nice.
Matt Barkowski. Aaron Ness.
All right. This one I thought was good, James. Lucas and I think Pisa. This is pretty interesting.
I'm still going here.
No, you're out. What is your confidence level in Coach Sheldon Keefe after 103 games? The most, on a scale of 1 to 10, the most popular answer was 7. But as you noted, this is down 2 from where it had been. It's going to be a really interesting year for him because the new coach stuff, which always happens with a new coach, is gone. There's now kind of critical eye, I guess, is some way to put it, in terms of some of the decisions he's made. He's kind of, like you said, his seat is a little warm. It's just he's more in the focus or spotlight than he was before, for sure.
Yep, I agree. One of the stories I wanted to do was, I don't know if the Leafs are going to grant our wish or not, but I wanted to talk to Keith one-on-one because I think that he's one of the biggest storylines going into the year. It'll be interesting to hear when he addresses the media or, hey, Leafs, if you're listening, if he talks to me one-on-one or if he comes on the Leaf Report. He should come on the Leaf Report.
Sure.
It'd be interesting to hear him just like kind of reflect on last season and what went wrong. And, you know, I think that to some extent he's still learning on the job, and maybe some of what he's done in the AHL maybe he needs to continue to adapt and adjust and grow as a coach. And, you know, one of the things that you get when you hire a coach out of the AHL without NHL experience is that there's sometimes a learning curve. So,
yep.
Maybe there's a process that Sheldon keeps going through here, and I don't know. Anyway, that's what I think about that.
It's going to be a very interesting year to see how he handles like the pressure around the team as well. Like this is the feeling from fans is different, I think, than it has been. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, although, you know, the fan survey kind of highlighted that the people that are like angry or that are really pessimistic or whatever, like it's really like 25% of the fan base is like that. And I think a lot of the other people are just sad and they're hoping that the team can get it done. But I don't know. They've soured a certain percentage of the fan base, and I think the media is going to be out for blood early on, especially if they don't look very good in like the first month of the season. But it's a good roster. It's a good team. The talk of the division being so difficult that they missed the playoffs or whatever, I think is ridiculous.
It's ludicrous.
It's ridiculous. Like, you know,
they're more likely to win the division than they are.
Yeah.
Miss the playoffs.
Is there a good team? Like, they're a top 5 or top 8 team in the NHL again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe better. We'll see.
And, you know, like the first round, like that's, I don't have questions about this team in the regular season, to be honest. Like, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, I do think, to highlight another point or question from the survey, and we can kind of block it, put it into a block, is that the opinion of management has gone a little worse in time, which you expect without results.
It's still pretty high though, Jonas.
Like, it's still pretty high though. Like, you look at, you know, for Kyle Dubas, what is it here?
There's only
22%, 7, 22%, 8.
Only 15% of people gave him a 4 or less out of 10. It's still like the people that are really, but you know what? There's a lot more like 5s and 6s than we've seen in the past. Like, there's a lot more like, mm-hmm. you know, where, and there's a lot fewer 9s and 10s. Although he still got 15% of people gave him a 9 or a 10.
I don't know what do you think you can really ding him on in the last little bit? Obviously, the Foligno trade did not work out. That was that did not work out at all.
Well,
I guess bringing back Frederik Andersen, like that was something we highlighted before the season, did not work.
Some of the forward depth bets didn't work again. Jimmy Vesey, Travis Boyd.
That's true.
Joe Thornton. You know, all the kind of...
But that comes back to the big thing, James, and that is like sticking with this.
Yeah, but they got a hit on some of those guys. Like, you know, like they're spending a little bit more on the Nick Ritchies and Kasha and Bunting and Kampf. They got a hit on some of these guys. Like, you know, maybe it's too hard just paying guys league minimum to get good players. Maybe the idea of paying them... What Kasha got 1.2 2.5, I think. And
yeah, it might be too hard. Like it, that's like goes back to the big bet that they're making, that like you can pay those four guys in this climate that much money and still have a good enough team. Like that, it just might not work. Like it just might not as well. Like you just might not be deep enough. I don't know. I think it can be. Like you just need those guys to be really good. And if they're not really good, that what happened last year is what happens.
I think this is probably like the right confidence level for a Dubas. Like I think this is probably about what he deserves. Like overall he's probably like what, like a high six or something like that. And but you're right. I mean, he's, I don't know. The team's gone largely in the right direction in terms of on paper and on the roster. They just collapsed at like the most pivotal time. And it must be so frustrating to be, I know it's frustrating from talking to people who like have everything on the line and have their jobs on the line on NHL teams, that like sometimes, you know, feels like it's out of your hands when the puck drops and, you know, anything can happen in a playoff series and any team can win.
Yes. Well, and if two of the five top five scorers in the league don't produce in a series, like good luck. I want to put these two together. Which offseason addition did you like the most? Which offseason addition did you like the least? So as you mentioned already, Nick Ritchie came in number one for the most. Number two was Peter Mrazek. Now, what I thought was interesting is Peter Mrazek was also the second choice for the offseason addition fans like the least after David Kampf.
Well, he got a lot of votes for both, which I'm surprised. Right? He got 26% for what people like the most, and he got 21% for what people like the least. So it's like half of fan. Like he could be a really polarizing player.
And that contract could be tricky.
What another team said to me about Mrazek is they didn't like the term on the contract. Yeah.
I'm sure if you gave Kyle Dubas Chersum, he would not want to do 3 years. Yeah. But like either you do 3 years, you just don't get him, right? Like so I don't know.
I think that was,
I didn't like it. Like I think it's too long and I don't totally trust him. But again, like you don't live in a perfect world. Like either you get someone or you just end up with nothing. It's like musical chairs. Like you could say to Peter Mrazek, we're not giving you the third year, and he's like, okay, peace, I'll go sign somewhere else. And who do you have? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it's just an imperfect solution to a difficult problem.
I was thinking last night to imagine if Jack Campbell has a big year, like what his contract will look like and where, you know, they're going to have to hope in that instance that Mrazek plays well enough that you're going to be able to trade him.
Yeah, because suddenly Campbell's contract will be more than Mrazek's.
Yeah.
You've put like, you basically put a bar on if he has a good year, what his contract will be, right? Like it'll be
four and more. Probably four or something. Yeah. Yep.
All right, let's take a break, and then we need to get to the pod bag, the return of the pod bag. All right, James, as always, before we get to the pod bag, a reminder to support your local restaurants. I went to a place not far from you recently. Have you ever been to Square Boy on Danforth?
No.
Like an old school, like burgers. I really like the souvlaki there. Highly recommend it. Just like an old school joint, got to pay cash.
Danforth and what?
It's like, I think it's like Pape and Danforth.
That is not my neighborhood, but yes.
Well, it's your old-ish neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's not far from you. I've told people where you live. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm east and you're downtown, so.
You got it. All right, pod bag time. What do you got?
Ryan in Suits asks, am I ready for another year of heartbreak? It's going to be interesting. I wonder if like, do you think ratings will be down? Do you think like readership will be down for, do you think everyone's back in full force? I get a lot of Leafs fans are telling me like, you know what? I'm probably just not going to like care as much for the regular season.
I could understand that sentiment. I just think once games are happening, you just inevitably will track it. I would think. I mean, they're good. They're still going to be a really good team. Like that's the thing. Like now everything that they do is going to come with like, an asterisk in terms of, okay, well, what about the playoffs? But it still will be interesting to follow 100%. And I think that will drag people back in. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's going to be down a little bit. I think there are going to be people, the more casual fans are going to probably not be as invested in. And people just, fans aren't going to buy if there's hype. Like if they start the season 20-6 or whatever, no one's going to be like, oh, you know, this is the best team in the league or whatever. It's just, I think it's going to be a little bit, the enthusiasm is going to be a little bit lesser.
I do think if they went on a streak like that, I think the narrative would just. I mean, it's Toronto. Like, you know how it goes. Like, it'll. I don't know. I think the media will kind of forget about that and say, this team's great. This is going to be the year.
Get on the bandwagon, Betty. Pridham's calculator. Good name. I don't think it's actually Pridham, though. His bio says, not your average Leafs shit poster. His question is, are you running out of Leafs player puns to use for this upcoming season?
No, you got lots now. Bunting is a good one.
I'm debating not doing it. I'm debating not doing the puns anymore. What do you think?
You know how I feel.
You feel that they're, I don't know. It's a lot of, I don't know. It's
eye rolling.
Some people, like, I think, mistake it that I'm being serious or something. So Twitter's just so weird that people can misinterpret your.
How about this? Just pick your spots. It doesn't need to be all the time.
Yeah. Well, like some games, it was just like getting really aggressive.
Yes, it was.
Patty McGee asks, Curtis Gabriel isn't actually going to play, right?
No.
There's nowhere for him to play. But then, so why did they sign him? Did they sign him to be like the good guy with the Marlies?
Yeah, exactly. He's averaged 7 minutes a game in his NHL career. He's just like, he seems like an interesting dude, but he's like a Marley, a good guy to have around with the Marlies, I would think.
He's a good follow on Twitter if you're on there. No puns, but he's got some other good stuff on there.
No puns.
I mean, here's like a big picture question. Alex Howe, is this a make or break year for everyone, management, coaches, the core? There's just no way the team's going to be the same if they falter. So I would say for the core, for sure. I don't know that they necessarily clean the management out if they lose. I
have some thoughts on this. I'm going to write about this, so I probably will keep my thoughts to myself a little bit.
Yeah, that's one.
But here's the only thing I would say. If they do not win the Stanley Cup this year, I don't think it's break. And so that's why I don't know that the make or break year works. Let me say that.
Corey has...
Is that a good tease, James?
No, that was a really tortured sentence you just said, so I don't know if anyone understands what your intention was, but I'm going to move on here. Corey Haslam says, what does Austin Matthews have to do to win the MVP? I mean, if he wins the goal scoring race by like 10 or something and the Leafs have a monster season, then
like he did last year?
Well, the problem was that McDavid had an even bigger year, right? So maybe the answer to that is that he needs to injure Connor McDavid. That'll be the way that he wins the MVP.
I think the answer is he needs to win the Rocket and they need to be like the best team in the league. And he needs to be within sniffing distance of McDavid. Like, if McDavid has, I don't know, 115 points or something, fuck, who knows what he'll have after last year. But let's say he has 115 and Matthews has like 103, but has 40 or has like 54 goals or something, and the Leafs are the third best team in the league, I think he has a chance.
Dan Wask asks, I feel like the Leafs are going to be a better team this year. The defense is basically the same. Goaltending should be improved or the same. Forward depth is more distributed on different lines. Do you think they could be better?
Yeah.
I think that's possible. I think they're similar. I think they're pretty similar.
I think they're the same.
They're pretty similar to last year. Like, I don't think that... I would be very surprised if there's a big step back coming here, barring like...
It's possible that they're better, though. Like, their power play was a disaster for the last couple months. Anderson was bad. Tavares wasn't great the first half of the year.
Darwin Dubas asks, why does no one consider Nick Robertson on the opening night roster? Considering the impact that Cole Caulfield had with the Habs, you got to think Robertson can at least contribute. Well, there's no space for him. They signed like four UFA NHL forwards, and they brought Simmons back. The perfect role, I think, for Robertson is injury replacement as like the 13th or 14th forward, because he's not going to require waivers, and he bounces back and forth, kind of like
But you're only doing that if you're playing him. Like, he's not, they're not going to bring him on trips to
No. No, I mean, like, he's the 13th or 14th forward when someone's hurt that you put in the lineup.
Yeah. You got to remember, like, I understand the excitement with him. He's barely played. Like, he's barely played in the AHL.
Well, people just see the prospect.
He just turned 20.
People see the prospect camp, and he's the best player by far, and he lights it up. And
he should be. That's like...
Yeah. But that's why there's the excitement around him and whatever. I think that, you know, if he plays 25 NHL games this year and plays a lot with the Marlies, I think that's a suitable season for him. There's no point. You don't have to rush him. And, you know, there's a lot of developments still that I think they're going to want to work on with Robertson, just in terms of, you know, his skating and, you know, there's some tools that I think he's going to need to be. You rush him.
He's going to have to get faster, man. Yeah. Like, that's for real.
That's the thing that stood out for me watching him live last year. Michael Nakarato. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Which Leafs player do you think has the biggest room for growth?
That's a good question.
I don't know. Sandin, is that?
Sandin was the first one that came to mind for me. I mean, Kerfoot, maybe? I mean, he's not really a young player. Dermott?
It would be interesting if Kerfoot had a big year. He was really good in the playoffs. Dermott's a good one, too. I mean, Dermott really didn't play very much last year.
And he's going to have to play more this year. Like, all those penalty-killing minutes that Bogosian took last year are going to Dermott now. And it's like, that would be... That's the thing with the Riley thing, like... You kind of want to see what happens with those guys. Like, you kind of want to see how Sandin plays this year and how Dermott plays this year. Like, that has to factor into Riley. That's not like they're not going to replace Riley, but I don't know. Next question.
Someone named Riley asks, what do you think?
Nice.
What do you think of the Leafs' realistic best and worst first round matchups in the Atlantic Division this season? I mean, worst would be Tampa.
Wouldn't worse be Boston, honestly?
No, because I don't think Boston's as good as they've been.
I do not think so as well.
I think they're vulnerable.
There's just
but
like
Tampa's worse. Tampa won the last two cups. How are they not a worse first round matchup than Boston?
I guess it's just like history would be so overwhelming.
Yeah, but maybe like I don't know. They get the chance to like slay the Dragons getting old
slay
and
the Dragon.
Chara there, and
I don't know, another Bruins Leafs first round series. Jesus.
It'd be awesome. It'd be fantastic. Sign me up.
There would be nothing that could make Leaf fans, I think, more anxious than that.
You and me are going back to that Residence Inn and recording podcasts at 3 a.m. when we can't.
Yeah.
I'll have a giant rum and coke in my hand and saying a bunch of nonsense.
I think we got time for two more, James.
Okay. Mike Snow wants to know, where does David Kampf play? Who should his wingers be to maximize his potential? And then he says, welcome back. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you to everyone for listening, by the way. I wanted to do that off the top and then I forgot.
Yeah, we know our listeners are coming back, even, you know, it's even if, you know, they're demoralized. It's, you know, we had a break. We're back in the saddle again. Let's go. Kampf is going to be the third line center. Who should he play with? I mean, I think Mikheyev makes a lot of sense. And maybe you put like Kasha there. We haven't written about this much, but Kampf and Kasha are really good friends, and they played together in the Czech Republic going back to when they were quite young. So, I think...
Yeah, Mikheyev, Kampf, Kasha makes sense.
I like it. And then you see what Kasha does, and if it looks like he's at full speed and can do a little bit more offensively, you give him some opportunities on PP2 and maybe on one of the top two lines.
I wonder, James, if you end up playing those third and fourth lines... similar-ish minutes. Like, obviously, that third line's going to play a bit more. But I wonder. All right, you got to bring a big question to close us out.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, redundancy here. Some of this is, like, stuff we've talked about. This is a good question.
Did you ever watch, James, can I just ask you, did you ever watch the UK Office?
No. Well, I've seen a couple of them. I've seen, like, I've seen a couple episodes. I've seen more of the Steve Carell one.
Okay, so the redundancy joke won't work on you. Okay, continue.
Ryan Bobier asks, how much of a drop-off on the penalty kill do you foresee? You know, losing Hyman and Bogosian were potentially their best penalty killers. Would it not make sense to scale back Marner's minutes on the penalty kill and save him for the playoffs?
I think the wild card is the new assistant coach from Carolina
who's the penalty kill whisperer?
The architect of like one of the best penalty kills in the league the last few years.
Well, I hope he works out better than Manny Malhotra as the power play whisperer.
Yeah, well, so far. one thing that could make a big difference on their penalty kill is Kampf, because he can win faceoffs. One of their big like Achilles heel last year and even the year before is they didn't have centers. They didn't have guys like who could win a draw outside of Jason Spezza on the penalty kill. And like you saw it in the Montreal series, Kerfoot kept having to take these draws, and in certain circumstances, he lost and they got scored on. Like he was like, I think he was like 30-something percent shorthanded in the faceoff circle. Like that's just brutal. And Kampf was like 50-something percent last year. So that's something. And like Frederik Andersen was really bad on the penalty kill last year. Like at some of the worst numbers in the league. Even if Peter Mrazek's just okay, like that's going to help you. Goaltending, James, apparently your best penalty killer has to be your goalie. Apparently.
Oh God.
Apparently.
Don't make that the subject of one of your articles, because I don't think we're going to publish it.
I'm going to make that the headline.
One last one. Loose Bund asks, does Marner need a more dangerous shot to keep opposing team's penalty kill from focusing on Matthews? Somebody does. Somebody on that.
William Nylander.
Yeah.
Like, holy lorsh. Lorsh isn't a word, but.
Time to unleash. Time to free Willie.
Yeah, I don't know that I can handle more of the stories about Marner shooting more. Like that,
I know.
We've heard that every single year.
That's part of why I asked that, because I was going to make a comment, but I didn't. But it seemed, how many off seasons in a row is that we've talked about him
working on a shot? But one of the possibilities is if you play him on a different penalty or power play unit than Matthews, maybe he shoots it more. Because if you look early in his career, he shot it more and he scored more in the power play. But now he's just clearly forcing it to Matthews, and he did not score in the power play last year. So that's all I got.
We need to, every time Nylander's not on the top power play unit, we should say free Willie. And we need someone to Photoshop.
Free Willie, I love it.
We need someone to Photoshop William Nylander jumping over the kid like from the movie.
That movie probably came out before he was born.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
That's like a 94, I think.
I think like, well, when was Willie born? 96?
I think he's like, is he 96? So Free Willie is 93. So oh, for sure.
You're right. You're right.
Wow. Man. Unbelievable. He probably doesn't even know the movie. Crazy.
He was born in Calgary.
He doesn't know.
That movie made a big impact, man. Like that was, I don't know about you, but in BC, that was a huge movie.
Yeah, because that was probably the only movie playing. Just kidding.
Yeah, maybe. We had two theaters and not very many. I think we had three screens in the city around that time. We had to. I remember lining up to see Ninja Turtles 2: Secret of the Ooze.
Love those movies.
We were lined up all the way down the street.
Did you guys get the movies like 2 years after they came out?
No.
Just kidding.
My hometown was like 85,000
people. I know. All right, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. Subscriptions are 50% off right now, so it's a good time to give us a shot. James, any parting thoughts? We'll be back next week to talk about actual camp, actual stuff.
Yeah, we're back. We're going to be on every week. If there's guests you'd like to see us have, just let us know on Twitter, and we're excited to take the show to the next level. So thanks for listening, and thanks for the support.